Broadcasting from Youngstown, Ohio, this is the MV Red Podcast, the show where we talk about news and politics impacting the Mahoning Valley, the state of Ohio, and the USA. If you want to subscribe to our podcast, find us on your favorite podcast streaming app or visit our website, www.mvred.com. If you want to share your opinion with us, please email info@mvred.com, as we would love to hear from you. Now, let's get things started. Here are your hosts, Michael Metzinger and Dane Davis.
So, Dane, how are you doing on this lovely Monday evening? Very hot, late August night in Northeast Ohio.
Yeah, it's toasty. It's toasty out there. It's really humid. I'm drinking water. This is the same bottle, just refilled with tap water. It's nice. We've had a beautiful summer so far. I don't think enough people have talked about that, but it's been a really good summer. It's good. And we've got politics happening, and you know, we're recording the MV Red podcast, and Michael got a new mic. Yeah, that microphone looks great. It looks like you're in a movie theater, like somebody with like a big haircut is sitting in the front row.
I had some money that I had to dig out of my parents' backyard for my first communion. I decided to buy a new router because it was embarrassing getting like 10 megabytes per second, and we're in 2020 the year, and I'm paying for like 150 megabytes per second. So yeah. I was dealing with that. I'm now getting like 80 megabytes per second. So that's exciting. And then I thought, why not buy a new microphone while we're at it? Instead of using one of these things here. So one to upgrade. We do have a question in the chat from Kurt already. Who's the sponsor tonight, Dane?
Who's the sponsor tonight? Gosh, I don't know. I don't know if we are sponsored tonight. Well, let me think about that for a second. That'll come to me. It's Monday. I'm not even on my game, right? I don't even know who's sponsoring us. That's a good question.
It's a good question. So, on tonight's episode, we're going to talk about last week's 2020 Democrat convention, virtual convention, which was really, and I'll say this for the Republican side as well. I think it's somewhat difficult to watch just because I'm used to being in a big arena, having the balloons, all the people, the cheering and all that. And seeing these virtual ones with pre-recorded videos, many of which were pre-recorded, and then like the really corny Hollywood actors and actresses adding their two cents wasn't my favorite, but I don't know. And we'll talk about the ratings and all of that. And then tonight, kicking off, we're actually competing against the Republican convention. I'm not even sure who's speaking, though. Is it Melania Trump?
No, I think it's like Donald Trump Jr. Here, I'm going to pull it up. Nikki Haley and Tim Scott. Nikki Haley, I don't like her. I'm not a big fan. Nikki Haley's very fake, in my opinion. She's like the Jeb Bush, right? She's somebody that the Republicans try to push on people, and nobody really likes that person, but they keep popping up. But yeah, it's Nikki Haley, Tim Scott, and Trump Jr.
Interesting. So we'll talk about I want to at least share my thoughts of what I saw of the Democrat convention. Also talk a little bit about what some of the pundits thought of it. I posted something yesterday on our Facebook page about how I thought the ABC Sunday morning talk show, I think it's called This Week, was pretty reasonable in their analysis, but I can't always say the same about good old Chuck Todd on NBC on Meet the Press.
Chuck Todd, he doesn't have a chin. Has anybody noticed that? Like, Google Chuck Todd right now. The guy doesn't have a chin. It's like his face is just like one unit, right? Like, there's no like neck unit area. I don't trust anybody that doesn't have a chin neck thing. Like, human beings are supposed to have like a chin, and then you have a neck, and it connects your head to your body. Chuck Todd doesn't have it. It's all like, it's, I don't know. I don't trust it. Why is Chuck Todd's, where do you even come from? Where do these pundits come from? Right? Like, why are these people, what gives them the right to opine on American politics. Like, they just ask questions. They're not even very good at asking questions, right? And they just talk to people, and they like ask like 8 questions. I could write down an 8 ask questions. Why don't I have a TV show? Where do they come from, Michael? These pundits.
I mean, I can see George Stephanopoulos. I always butcher his name. I'm not even
George Stephanopoulos.
Yes, at least he worked in the Clinton campaign. But
yeah, he's a partisan Democrat.
What did he do?
I don't know. George Stephanopoulos is a partisan Democrat. Like, he's a huge Democrat, and now like he's like an independent reporter. It's like, come on, give me a break. Like, I don't get it. George Stephanopoulos. He's like not very tall. But he does have a chin.
Boy, you're ripping people with no chins, people who aren't tall than that. You're on a roll.
No, but look, here's the point. These people are horrible people. They're horrible people, right? They pretend to be very serious, and they tend to act like they have gravitas. And they talk in these deep voices, and they ask the questions that the country needs to have asked. But they're just useless. They're it's unintelligent drivel. Here's one thing that everybody should do at one point in your life. Go on YouTube and search like 1950 Meet the Press. And there's a level of questioning and sophistication and intelligence on one of those shows. Go to pull up episodes of Firing Line, George Buckley or William F. Buckley, not George Buckley, William Buckley's Firing Line, right? There's a high level of intelligence and discourse, right? And then you watch like a Chuck Todd or a George Stephanopoulos, you realize these guys are like, they're getting paid millions of dollars, and they're doing nothing for this country. They're asking just dumb questions. They love to talk about these like little issues, you know, like the issue of the day, like, oh my God, you know, did Trump say that we should inject bleach into our veins? And they're just dumb. It's just, I don't know. I'm so sick of all these people. And they come across as so serious. So somebody has to make fun of these people. Somebody has to be like George Snuffleupagus, whatever his name is like 5'5" and is a total Democratic flunky. And so is Chuck Todd, and he doesn't have a chin. We need to knock these people down to size. I'm sick of it. The elite of all these shows, they just need to be made fun of ruthlessly because they're horrible people. But anyway, sorry, Michael. I'm getting derailed.
And I'm sure that's going to happen often tonight. I'm not necessarily a big fan of Chuck Todd. I saw him on, I think it was Friday morning on the Today Show, and he just made it seem like it was just a tremendous convention for the Democrats. We'll see. There hasn't really been any sort of bump in the polls for Biden at all. And we'll talk about the ratings in a minute. They really weren't good at all. But again, it's much more difficult, I would say, to watch a virtual convention compared to what we are accustomed to in this country. So we'll talk about that. I also want to highlight a few things that I have found interesting in some polls that have come out recently. There's been some, again, some continued tightening that what we discussed on the last episode. There was a CNN poll out on, I think it was Sunday, that was talking about the race being a 4-point race. And that's CNN saying that. And remember, I mean, Trump only lost nationwide by a little over 2 points. So he's really tightened this race up quite a bit, it seems as though. But the interesting number, and I don't want to jump ahead here, is talking about the independents and the independent vote, which in quite a few polls recently has shown Trump winning it as much as 10 points in the CBS one that came out. So we'll talk a little bit about that, and we'll kind of see where the episode goes. I also wanted to share with those in the chat the 2016 Mahoning County election results, just something to kind of look over. It is kind of fascinating. Usually when you see election results, you only are looking at countywide results, but it's nice to kind of dig into those numbers. And unfortunately, we live in a state where the Secretary of State breaks it down by precinct. And so I have those numbers first. So, but we'll talk about that last. But if anybody, first off, you know, if anybody wants to join us, has any questions, you know, let us know again in the chat. We'll be happy to open it up for people who might want to join us and talk for a little bit. If you have any questions, by all means, share them in the chat, and we'll be sure to share them. Kurt's asking if you're anti-little people.
No, not at all. Not at all. That's actually, you know what? I'm just saying Stephanopoulos is a really short guy. Like, he doesn't come across on TV, but in reality, he's really, really tiny. No, I don't dislike Stephanopoulos because he's short. I dislike him because he's a Democratic partisan that pretends to be like an objective, serious journalist, right? That's, I mean, so is the rest of the media, but like that's why I dislike George Stephanopoulos. Yeah, Chuck Todd, I think, is worse than George Stephanopoulos. George Stephanopoulos is, he has a little bit of charisma. I feel like Chuck Todd has zero charisma. I don't know who he is blackmailing to get where he got. I don't really like him.
He doesn't even try to be, in my eyes, he doesn't even try to be neutral. I mean, he is just like, to me, every episode he's openly anti-Trump and pushing the talking points of the left, which again, I mean, that seems to be the case with a lot of people in the media, but especially on a Sunday morning talk show when like, you know, Tim Russert back in the day, you know, regardless of where Tim Russert was at least he asked hard questions of both sides. It just seems as though Chuck, I don't know, not a fan. I'm not going to get into that.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the guy. He's just a mediocrity, and like the fact that he's making millions of dollars asking questions is just, it shows our system is fundamentally broken. You know, he's not an intelligent guy. He just got there because he got there. I don't know. He's blackmailing somebody. He's clearly blackmailing somebody. You want to talk about, I know QAnon was in the news. I don't believe in QAnon. I'm not a QAnon dude. I'm starting a new conspiracy theory that Chuck Todd is clearly blackmailing somebody at NBC News to get where he got. Right? Like George Stephanopoulos. Okay, well, he's like a good looking guy, right? And he's got political experience. You get why he rose to where he was. But what is Chuck Todd at? I don't know. Anyways, okay, moving on.
No, and real quick before we talk about the DNC. So I was, I wasn't like a follower, but I was aware of this whole Q thing. I don't know the whole history behind this QAnon. But back in, I want to say it was probably early 19, there were some random Twitter posts that I saw, and one was even from Sean Hannity. And somehow or another, I got connected to this QAnon thing. And let me tell you, if you want to read QAnon, you got to go to the dark web.
Yeah.
You better have like a secure browser. I don't even think incognito mode in Google Chrome would do you justice. Let me tell you, it was you go to the deep abyss of the web to find this guy's posts. And like he would post things, or he or she or whatever the hell the thing is, would post things, and then people would respond and try and like decode whatever the guy's, whatever it is trying to say.
Q.
Yes. Yeah. Q. And it's like, where we go one, we go all, or something like that's the big.
Yeah. I am not a QAnon person. The predictions have failed to come true. There were very specific predictions, like Hillary would be in jail. Never happened. It's not real. It's an anonymous person. You can like get a screen name essentially of Q, and they were posting that. But, you know, what I find interesting is, you know, QAnon is this kind of this interesting conspiracy theory that's out there that's mostly baby boomers that are really into it.
Yes.
And it's like the media loves to do this. They love to hype up things that like the right wing does. And they're like, QAnon is a threat to our democracy. The fact that we have these conspiracy theories out there, I mean, people cannot listen to the news. They don't know what are facts. They can't have real adequate information to make decisions. And we need to ask every single Republican out there, do you believe in QAnon or not? And will you disavow QAnon? Right. So they go up to like some senator from like Kansas, who's a Republican, and he's like 85 years old, and he's hard of hearing. And they're like, do you disavow QAnon? And he's like, I like Q's, you know what I mean? And then they're like, senator from Kansas believes in QAnon. And then you get like these think pieces in The Atlantic about like how QAnon is disrupting democracy. And meanwhile, right, the Democrats come up with conspiracy theories all the effing time. But the difference is, you know, they're equally stupid. I'd argue the Democrat conspiracy theory is a little bit more stupid, right? But like the media gives them credibility and they spread them, right? I remember Bush was going to cancel the election. Bush had already captured Osama bin Laden and was hiding him, and they was going to release him, right? And then with Trump, the whole Russia thing was a giant conspiracy theory that wasn't true. There was no collusion, right? It was a collusion delusion. And then the most recent one that is so stupid, and I'm really sorry if you're listening to this show and you believe this, and like I don't know what to say because it's scary. You need to go to the doctor because it was like Trump is going to destroy the post office, the U.S. postal system, right? Right? We're all going to mail in ballots, and Trump is single-handedly taking those blue post office bins, and he's going to establish the Third Reich in America by eliminating the blue post office bins. And we are proud liberals, and we are going to say, I am blue, and I stand with the U.S. Postal Service, right? And it was like, are you guys fucking serious? Are you guys serious? Right? It's the dumbest conspiracy theory, but the media will never call that out. The media will be like, oh, I don't know. I saw, you know, let's do a news story on a postal box that was taken down. Uh-oh, maybe there's something to it, right? They won't debunk it. But like QAnon gets shit upon completely. So that's my view. Not all, they don't treat conspiracy theories equal. They don't.
We have a question in the chat from my cousin Nico, who joined us last episode. He wants to know what made us go up against the RNC. Is it a protest?
It's not. No. I just had some free time this afternoon or this evening.
Well, we had to get our thoughts, and we want to at least, I think, recap a little bit of the Democrat convention, which we'll do in a minute, and kind of share, at least I want to share my thoughts and as to what the Republicans need to do with their convention tonight. Obviously, I know people are going to be watching that, but again, you can only watch so much of a virtual show as far as I'm concerned. Then Nico's brother, Anthony, also my cousin, obviously, says there's no only way Trump loses is in a rigged election.
Anthony, Trump is the newest dictator. He went back in time, right? 30 years ago, made the post office highly inefficient because he knew come 2020, mail-in ballots would be key to this election. So like he went back in the 1990s and was like, hey, post office, don't modernize at all, right? And he sabotaged it. And Trump is flying around in Air Force One or in that Marine One, the helicopter. And he's like taking a baseball bat. He's just whacking down mailboxes across the country. And we got to stop him. He's a dictator. He's a fascist. He's a fascist because mailboxes are disappearing. You know, that's the new conspiracy theory. He's destroying the mail. Amazon was like a day late in delivering my package. And you know who was responsible? Donald J. Trump.
And if I recall correctly, and I could be off on my facts here, I'm kind of going off of memory. And Shanley says she likes the new mic, so I appreciate that, Shanley. If you remember in Youngstown, a big component of their postal operation in downtown Youngstown was eliminated. And now a lot of the mail that goes through the Mahoning Valley actually has to go to Cleveland, I believe, to get sorted. I could be off on this, but I just wish, you know, my biggest issue with politics is there's just no consistency. And that didn't happen when Trump was president, from what I recall. I believe that was when – I think that was actually 2012. I looked this up a few days ago. I think it was in 2012 when that actually happened. And obviously, President Obama was president at the time. I'm not blaming President Obama for closing, but again, if we're gonna say, you know, oh, this office is closed and they're removing these postal boxes, right now they're blaming Trump for it. But really, I mean,
no, you don't understand. You don't understand. See, Obama or Trump is such a fascist dictator that he went back in time and bribed Barack Obama. He's infiltrated. He's like Obama shut down the post office in 2012. So in the 2020 election, I can rig it. You see, you don't understand. You don't understand. I don't know. Didn't you see the Facebook photos of like blue postal bins, you know, like all in a pile? It's clear. Like, how are you so dumb? How can you not understand this? He's getting rid of the mail. There's not gonna be any mail. He's going to be president forever. We won't be able to vote.
Scary times, Dane. Scary times.
I'm so scared. I got to protect my mailbox. I use a gun to protect it, but I'm a liberal and I don't believe in the Second Amendment. So I just have to write a strongly worded letter, which I won't even be able to deliver because of the mail. Trump's such a genius. Oh, I hate that guy. Orange man bad.
So let's talk briefly about the Democrat convention that was last week. I mean, I'll admit I didn't watch a ton of it. I did watch some aspects of it. And again, like I said at the start of the episode, I tried to watch some of the commentary on some of the Sunday talk shows related to it. One thing that was promoted quite frequently, especially in Republican circles, were the ratings of the 2020 DNC. And again, I caution this because I'll share the numbers in a second. The Republicans could have poor ratings as well. The cheerleading may have taken place a little prematurely, but I think what's most noticeable is night four when Joe Biden spoke. He got less than 22 million viewers on the big six networks, ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, CNN, maybe MSNBC, I think was the other one they're including in there, compared to 28 million for Hillary Clinton in 2016. It was almost 23% drop night four. And the entire convention, if you go through at least these reported numbers, the ratings were down 21%, almost 20 million. I know from reading in some of the Democrat circles, they cite the fact that a lot more people were streaming. I do question if you're going to make up a ton of that 22 million person gap, viewer gap from streaming alone. So, you know, one thing I will say this, kind of some overall thoughts. It seems as though the tone of the convention was focused more on stopping Trump. The one unifier for the Democrats is their opposition to Trump. They don't like Trump. They want him gone. In terms of issues, it didn't seem like there was a ton of when it comes to the issues that was discussed. I know they talked about some with the COVID-19 response, how a President Biden would institute a national mask mandate. But it seemed like a lot of the other issues it was lacking. It was, we're going to stop Trump. We have to stop Trump. And they talked about this quite a bit yesterday on ABC as well. ABC did have an interview. I think David Muir had an interview with Trump and Kamala Harris last night, where in the interview, Joe Biden had said he would raise taxes on everybody making $400,000 or more. And he also mentioned that if the scientists came to him that said, we should shut down the country again, he would do it, which I think we learned the lesson of doing it once. It has catastrophic economic consequences. So obviously those last two points weren't discussed, but wasn't much in terms of the issues. And I want to throw this at you, kind of another thought. I think the risk for Democrats is, yes, they're ahead right now in the polls, but the risk for them is that they could be making the same mistake that I think the Republicans made in 2012. Remember, in 2010, the Tea Party, Republicans, midterms, they really, 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 opposition to the whole Obamacare. I'm not even sure if Obamacare was even, I forget the timing of that, when Obamacare was actually passed or it was a piece of legislation in the mix. The rallying cry was, you know, anti-Obama. Then in 2012 came around, I think the Republicans made the mistake of thinking that they could use that same rallying cry to win in 2012, anti-Obama. It wasn't necessarily a pro-Romney vote. I don't think a ton of Republicans were extremely enthusiastic of voting for Mitt Romney in 2012. And I don't think the Republicans did necessarily a great job that year on focusing on the issues. Again, it was anti-Obama. And the risk for Democrats is doing that same thing in 2020, because here's the risk. Joe Biden has a huge enthusiasm gap, and Joe Biden is not this generational candidate. I mean, he's been in Washington for 40 plus years. He's not like a real exciting candidate in any way, shape, or form. So it's not like a pro-Biden vote. It's an anti-Trump vote. And where I think it could cost him, and which we'll talk about a little later on this episode, is where the independents are right now. Because yes, anti-Trump resonates with Democrats, and that's a rallying cry to bring them together. But is it enough to win a general election? We'll see. But it's the risk of making the same mistake the Republicans, I think, did back in 2012.
Did you watch any of the speeches, Michael?
Which of this past week?
Of the DNC, yeah.
Not too much. I mainly saw highlights. I'm trying to think. I saw a little bit of Kamala's, and then who spoke? I saw a little bit of Bill Clinton's, who surprisingly had one of the shortest, I think, I forget how short his speech was compared to what it was 4 years ago, but not too many of the others. Again, I'm kind of going off of articles I read.
Yeah, I watched some of it. So, and the reason I asked that was from what I saw, I think you're generally right. I think that's a good observation. From what I saw Elizabeth Warren, I saw Kamala Harris. I don't mean to mispronounce her name, but I feel like it's shifted.
It has shifted all of
it. It definitely has shifted, right? Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, Barack Obama. I saw Barack Obama. I didn't see night one. I was busy working. I didn't get to see. I watched a little bit of Joe Biden and Jill Biden. Jill Biden, doctor. I think it's Dr. Jill Biden. I saw some other clips which were kind of weird and funky. There were some really weird stuff going on. But so everything you just, I think that you have the right take, and I like how you framed 2010, which was a huge midterm victory for the Republicans, versus 2018. Huge midterm victory for the Democrats, and then the conventions, right? This complacency kind of takes over, and this anti-Obama, anti-Trump force, you know, maybe just not enough. A couple of things, random observations. One, why is Bill Clinton there? Bill Clinton, there's photos of Bill Clinton that were released when he was speaking at the convention of him with like an underage girl on Epstein Island. Like he was on the travel logs for Epstein's Island. Like, why is he speaking? He should have. I mean, didn't Me Too happen? Does Me Too not apply if you're a Democrat? I don't know. Why is Bill Clinton? Why is he speaking? Why? They have Obama. Obama is, you know, he never did anything bad with women or that. Why Bill Clinton? Like the whole thing about like Trump being so vulgar and horrible and that kind of rings hollow when you've got Bill Clinton up there. And there are credible people such as Kathleen Wiley and Juanita Broderick that accused him of rape. Not to mention that he's on the travel logs for Jeff Epstein on the pedo island. So why is he there? That was my first question, right?
They like to put they like to hide that one. They don't want to touch it for some reason. It the hypocrisy again.
Yeah,
starts with our media.
The second thing was Jill Biden was really convincing and charming. I really liked Jill Biden. I thought she gave a really good speech. I really didn't know her that much. I've seen her before, bits and pieces, but I thought she was really compelling. I'm surprised the Democrats don't show Jill Biden more. I think she's a really likable person. She humanizes Joe Biden. So I thought that was good. And then another question I had was like Hunter Biden was there, and Hunter Biden impregnated a stripper, had an affair with his brother's widow, and abandoned the child of his stripper. Why is he up there, right? Like he's not a good person to be up. Why is Hunter Biden up there? Like we destroyed Kavanaugh over these like very thin accusations, and yet they're parading Hunter Biden. Like, hey bud, why don't you pay for the child you sired, Hunter Biden? That was weird. Barack's speech, I thought he's very charismatic. He did very well in the forum. But like Barack's speech was he was kind of like very passive against Trump, I noticed. And overall, I don't know. Here's a question I have, and it's a genuine question. Where do the Democrats stand on foreign policy? Are they against the wars? Are they for keeping our troops in Afghanistan? I didn't hear it come up at all. Are they the interventionist policy party now? Or are they the ones that want us to invade the Middle East and remake it for democracy? Because that failed, but they're very silent about that. And, you know, Joe Biden was in favor of every disastrous war that the United States has fought for the last 20 years. Where are the Democrats on foreign policy in these endless wars? You don't hear about that anymore. You just it was very much like, you know, there are all these problems with America, racism, right? Nobody likes racism. And don't elect us Democrats. We're going to fix it. How are you going to fix it? Well, we're going to fight systemic racism. Okay, but what are you going to do? It doesn't matter, right? Just shut up and vote for it, you idiot. We're not Donald Trump. that was the convention in a nutshell, in my opinion.
Yeah, and much was said about Joe Biden's speech, because from all accounts, he did a good job. He didn't have any issues, no gaffes or anything. You know, I do push back on it some. It is from a teleprompter. It's not. It's completely different than a debate. And I saw some people in Republican circles on social media saying they were kind of surprised he didn't have one of his gaffes or anything, but a script, which is what he had to do. I mean, when you're up in the polls like he is and hiding in the basement, sticking to the script and not making any strategic errors is really important. So, again, I think Republicans have this thought process that every time he goes public, he's going to do something questionable, which he, if you watch Monday night, he did say something to the effect of like, he went on screen when Jill Biden was done and he said, "Hey, I'm Joe Biden's husband," or something like that. Again, questionable thing. We'll see how it happens in the debates. I think they'll have him ready, but again, three debates, 2 hours each, whatever it is, or 90 minutes each. Let's just say 6 hours total. I think he's bound to have at least one or two gaffes or one of his slip ups. But I think he did what he had to do. Again, the polling right now that I've seen hasn't shown any sort of bump whatsoever, which again doesn't surprise me based on the fact the ratings really weren't good. I'm not sure if a lot of people who may be typically starting to follow politics watched it, just when you're down 20 million viewers in the course of four nights. Another thing is I believe Hillary spoke, which was kind of fascinating that they would even have put her out there. Another kind of washed up name who still is not over the fact she lost in 2016, although everybody knows going in that you don't win based on the popular vote. You win based on the Electoral College, and it was her own inaction which cost her the election. I mean, she lost three Rust Belt states by less than 100,000 each, and yeah, it's her own damn fault that she didn't win. So, in the chat right now, my friend Robert Swicka says, I'll share this on the screen. What's sad is in both parties is there aren't names that have such respect nationally to really convince voters to sway one way or the other. I think the one point I do agree with, they are relying on old folk tale names who were once political figures. It does seem like that was at least on the Democrat side that they did throw a lot of their old names out there, with Clinton, Obama, Hillary. I'm trying to think of the Republican lineup. I don't know if there's any. Well, the one thing is a lot of old school Republicans don't like Donald Trump. You're not going to have George W. Bush out there.
And
John McCain obviously passed away, and he was never a fan. So Mitt Romney, another previous nominee for the Republicans, hates his guts. So they're not strolling him out there.
Huge loss, right? Oh, they had John Kasich at the Democratic convention.
Big mistake on my part for having a sign in my yard for him.
John,
poor choice by me.
He is a classless individual. It's not because he supports the Democrats, to be very clear. It's because he was the governor of the state of Ohio, and the Republicans had their convention here, and he didn't even attend and welcome them to the state, right? Like, even if he were a Democrat, he should have still done that. Both parties are kind of running on fumes, and both parties are kind of banking on the legacy of boomers. I mean, the Democrats, I will give them this. They do have Obama, right, who's a younger – he's in his 40s or 50s, early 50s. He and Michelle are genuine political talents. But the fact that they were trotting out Bill Clinton, it's like – come on, guys. Hillary Clinton, Hillary's stale. Here's one thing that I saw about the Democratic convention. I think this kind of goes on this topic, right? They were playing all this 60s protest music, right? And it's like, how many more decades are we going to have to listen to this stale boomer rock, right? Imagine, if you would, the Generation Xers insisted that like Nirvana be played at every single political convention from like 1992 until today, right? That just seems absurd. Like Nirvana for 30 years, but yet the same 60s rock songs, and some of them I like, get replayed at every convention. And I swear to God, like Creedence Clearwater Revival gets played at every Democrat convention. And it's like, guys, let's move on. You know, they had somebody from Crosby, Stills, and Nash playing a guitar at the end. And it's like the guy was 70 something. And it's the Democrats. This is what gets me. It's like they're the party of Wall Street. They're the party of foreign intervention. They're the party of neoliberalism, right? They're the party of Bill Clinton opening up the borders, TPP, NAFTA, etc. But yet they trot out these old, like, we're rebelling against the establishment, guys. Guys, you are the damn establishment. Like, the Pritzker family are billionaires. They're Democrats. They're the establishment. Kamala married a big financier, right? They're the establishment. The Dems are the establishment, right? And yet they still play up this tired old trope of, like, we're fighting the man, and it's the 60s, and we're rebelling against the squares. And that, it's like, give me a break, you know? Give me a freaking break. Like, Pete Buttigieg is CIA. Mayo Pete is CIA. You're the establishment. I don't know.
Well, I think you bring up a good point with the establishment. The Republican establishment has, in my eyes, in many ways, has lost out to this new Trump wing. They've struggled. They've lost control. And then you've seen the likes of Kasich. You saw McCain. You see Mitt Romney. You see Jeff Flake. These establishment Republicans that they've lost control of what the Republican Party, at least in their eyes, once was. And it's a gamble, I would say, for the Democrats to go with somebody who's been in Washington for 40 or 50 years. He certainly isn't the future of the Democrat Party by any stretch of the imagination. I know, Dane, you've talked about AOC being the future and kind of what she represents, maybe not necessarily her, but what her and the squad represents, is that's kind of their vision moving forward. I did want to mention something real quick on John Kasich, because I thought it was kind of interesting. Chris Christie, former governor of New Jersey, who's an ABC analyst now, he went after Kasich. And I just want to read this quote. He was talking, I think, after the Kasich spoke, and he said, and here's the quote starts, "Just to show you where John Kasich's standing is in the Republican Party, when he was the only Republican governor left on the stage in the 2016 primary, Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, and John Kasich were the three candidates left. Do you know how many Republican governors of his sitting colleagues endorsed Kasich? Zero. And the reason they didn't endorse him is because he's a backstabber and he's an untruthful guy. Tonight, Republicans are going to look at that and go, you can have him. Please, believe me, give us a break. Get him out of our party. You can take him for a little while." And then he said at the end, which I thought was really interesting, because on top of that, I've worked with John a lot. He's exhausting. So it was interesting for a fellow governor, Chris Christie, who, you know, I haven't heard too much about him lately, to kind of go after Kasich like that. I think my biggest issue with Kasich is, again, as somebody who previously had supported him, was in the 2016 convention for him in his own state, hosting his own party's convention. He had this little feud, you know, again, opposition to Trump, his hatred to Trump, jealousy, what have you. And his refusal to go to the Republican convention is just something that has stuck with me. Another thing is, like, after the election was over, he would post all this random stuff. Him and his advisor, who I believe is a Russian agent, or what, registered as John Weaver, I think is his name. I used to follow him on Twitter. They just seemed like they were putting. I think Kasich came out with a book after, and his vision for the country. It just seemed like he wanted to run in 2020. It wasn't going to happen. But my biggest issue is how he had no problem this election in 2020. Well, if it were in Milwaukee, he was going to go there. He was going to find his way to Milwaukee, Wisconsin for the Democrat convention, but he freaking couldn't come to Cleveland, Ohio, in his own freaking state and do that. The freaking Democrat mayor of Cleveland at least addressed the convention. Where was Kasich at? So that's my biggest issue with the guy. I had to unleash on that. But, you know, he paints himself as holier than thou. I think he's far from it.
Yeah, listen, their old Republicans kind of suck. Like, if we're being honest with it, and I'm somebody who's voted Republican my entire life, but they kind of sucked. You know, the establishment hates Trump, but well, much the in favor of Trump. Like, there was this thing that came out a week or so ago where the Wall Street Journal had like 60 Republican foreign policy experts are taking out a full page ad in like the New York Times to say that Trump is not good. And it's like, well, good. good. I don't want these guys invite you idiots. We've been in Afghanistan for 17 years now, 18 years. For what? For what? Those people died. For what? How? What? Can anybody articulate that? Why are we even there? To bring democracy to a Stone Age tribe? Iraq, why did we even do that? Like, looking back, that was a total disaster. We spent $1 trillion and 500,000 Iraqis died. 5 to 10,000 Americans died. I think it was around 5. For what? For what aim? The Republican foreign policy establishment was wrong. You know, and the Democrats went along with it too. And then when the war went south, they turned against it. But they went along with it completely. So Trump was completely right when he's like, hey, these wars were a disaster. America first. That's the policy. That's the credo. That's the should be the Republican Party. Forget who gives an F about Baghdad and what's the capital of Afghanistan? I can't even remember anymore.
I'm usually Kabul. Pretty good with geography.
Kabul,
I don't
Kabul.
Even...
Kabul.
Oh, okay.
It should be about Chicago in Washington, D.C. and Los Angeles. Not a single American life is worth any of these countries. Any of them. I'm sorry. Libya. Obama bombed Libya. We're in Syria. I don't remember voting on the war for Syria, but we're in there now. Sorry. So the Republican establishment, like, go F yourself, guys. I'm glad you guys don't like Trump. That makes me want to vote for him more when you're like, he's a disaster. Yeah. Matt Gaetz is at the Republican convention. Just said Trump was the first president since Reagan not to start a new war. Thank God. Thank God. That's a good thing.
Yeah. And obviously, I'm not in any way, shape or form an expert on foreign policy. I at least like to look at things from a fiscal perspective. And I do like the fact that, you know, with how much we're spending right now on COVID stimulus packages, we didn't get ourselves in another war. My cousin Nico did want to throw in that. Did you know John Kasich's father was a mailman? he likes to remind us of that. And then he says that may be why Trump is going after the Postal Service to get back at Kasich. Oh, gosh. Yeah, good old John Kasich. Any other thoughts, I guess? You know, I guess, you know, real quick on the Republican convention, because I know, you know, people are probably tuning into that. I guess my thoughts on it, I think the Republicans have to hit home the issues. I wish this was more about the issues, because I think Trump can win on the issues. And I think you take Trump out of the equation with some of these issues, I think independence especially would resonate. I think especially when it comes to law enforcement and being very tough on China, I think those are two things, especially currently with the state of our country. You know, we're dealing with COVID-19, that pandemic, China, and how – you know, their response and how that's impacted our country. I think being tough on China, which Trump has proven, I mean, nobody could argue that. And then I think a real pro-law enforcement platform would go a long way. And really just kind of hit home on, you know, this is corny, but I really don't care. I think it matters, because anymore, it seems like some don't want you to be proud of our country and our history. Take the good with the bad. I mean, it's a great country that we live in. And I think one side doesn't want you necessarily to feel that way. At least that's kind of what I gather. And they want to tear down history. And I think that, you know, focusing, you know, on, you know, we're not going to, you know, tear down our history, being patriotic, all those types of things would go a long way. I think those are rallying cries. And it seems like that might be the case of some of the themes for each night of the convention.
I completely agree with you. The law and order theme needs to be number one. You can't have a democracy without law and order, right? The first principle of government is to protect law and order, and to keep things security, right? That's the number one reason we have a government. We don't have a government so that we have blue postal boxes. We have a government so that we can be safe in our homes and our property, so that when you go and work, your wife and children who are at home are safe and they're not going to get robbed and murdered, right? And we have – the Democrats are turning a blind eye towards violence, towards lawlessness, and towards destruction. Right now we just had there was a police shooting yesterday where, you know, a black man and white police officer shot the guy. You know, they had their guns pulled. It was a 19-second video. You know, who knows all the facts, right? And now Kenosha, Wisconsin is in flames, right? And innocent people, innocent businesses are suffering, right? So, you know, I work in downtown Cleveland. Downtown Cleveland has not come back from the riots, not the COVID, but riots. They destroyed a lot of the stores, and it's a dead city. These riots have hurt Americans all over the country. They've destroyed and gutted downtowns. And we need somebody to come out and say, you know what? America's a good country. It's a fundamentally decent country. It's not a perfect country, but it's our country, right? And we should be proud of it. And I no longer should we surrender the moral high ground to these cowards who use bricks and Molotov cocktails to make their points, their political points, right? No, 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 no. No longer should we. Nancy Pelosi today just said that Republicans are domestic enemies. Domestic enemies. You know, that's disgusting language. If the Republicans were to say that, I totally condemn it. But for the Speaker of the House of Representatives to say that Republicans are domestic enemies, right? It's part and parcel of the left wing's turn towards this totalitarianism. They can't win the argument. And Michael, to your point, we need to have an issue, or we need to race on the issues, because we can win on the issues. We have the right issues. No more wars overseas. No more trade with China. Building American jobs back home. You know, and patriotism, law and order. You know, taming coronavirus. All these different things, right? These are winning messages. These are winning issues. We should be proud to run on the issues.
I agree wholeheartedly with you. I think one last point maybe related to that is, and I didn't touch on it when we were talking about the Democrats. I believe there was maybe a proposal coming out of the Biden side that was going after taxes on investments some more, especially when it comes to stock sales. I think it's like a small percentage per transaction or something like that. I don't know if you saw that, Dane, but it was Yeah, I think Kamala Harris is actually touting this, and that would raise like 10 or I forget how many. It was a pretty substantial dollar amount, but it was just, again, another tax that they're looking for to fund their big government agenda. I did want to throw that out there because I forgot to mention that. But I agree with your points on the Republican convention, especially on the issues. I think they really got to hit home the issues, and which I think kind of go off of that now, moving forward with this campaign, is I think you're going to see Trump go out there. He's already been able to do some small rallies. I think you're going to see that where he's going to continue to go to city after city, you know, maybe go to airport hangars, things like that, outdoor settings where maybe he's allowed to have some sort of audience and campaign on these issues. And sooner or later, I don't think the Biden stay in the basement strategy is going to you could continue down that stretch. You just can't keep hiding him. You can't keep him off of the Sunday morning talk shows, those types of things. So I think this is a real opportunity for Trump. One, the Democrats really, again, by all accounts, did not have any sort of bounce out of their convention. Their ratings really weren't good. They were down, again, 20%. You have the opportunity as the second convention to kind of set the tone moving forward going into the next. I think that the first debate might be in late September. Hit the issues, have a disciplined campaign moving forward, start hitting the battleground states, go places, get the base fired up. And you're going to put, I think, the Biden folks in a tough situation. Do you risk getting Biden out there? He doesn't, I don't think, have the stamina to do what Trump's going to do, which is going to go all over the place. They risk him, you know, with a gaffe of some sort. And they can ill afford that, especially with the debates coming up. So I think this is a real opportunity over the next month for the Trump and the Republicans to really tighten this race even further. You know, again, which I've been talking about, we talked about in the last episode, how this race has really tightened up quite a bit. I did want to say one thing. Let me see if I could find it here real quick. The betting odds, which again, people's money are, you could bet on the election. I'm not doing it, but you could
I think
bet
it's legal on the, now.
Yeah. So at one point back in, I think this was August 1st, Real Clear Politics, like they do with their polls, they average all of the different, betting. I don't know where we'll say different, I guess websites, sports books type of things. And at one point, Joe Biden's lead was 20 over almost 25 points. The lead has cut down to, as of right now, it's 11.6 points. And so they're giving Joe Biden 55.3% chance of winning, Donald Trump 43.7. So it's tightened quite a bit. People are starting to put money into Trump. And
I mean, I tend to agree. It's not just the polls, but when the money's on the line, and we, you know, we were pretty bearish on the Trump campaign.
We were
3-4 episodes ago. And I agree with you. I was not happy with how he handled post George Floyd and the racial unrest in this country. And I thought to myself, what is he doing? And we shared our grievances related to that. But I think new campaign manager has worked. You know, there was going to be some natural tightening as well, but I really think if you could rally the base, it's going to give him a really, you know, decent chance. I mean, the incumbent historically has done, you know, has pretty strong odds, you know, maybe of winning re-election. So, well, we shall see kind of how the next month goes, but I like where this race is at right now compared to where it was about a month ago.
Yeah, I think he does need to go on the offensive because, I mean, watching the Democrat convention, the thing I got out of it was America is a systemically racist country. Vote for us, the Democrats, and we'll fix it, to which raises the question of, well, why haven't you fixed in the areas where you are in power or have been in power for decades? You know, like, you can't say Chicago is a very Republican city, and yet there are massive inequalities there, racial disparities, et cetera. So if the solution to the racial ills of America, right, which is to vote for Democrats, then, you know, where's the proof of that, right? That's a thesis that requires proof to test out, and we haven't seen it. We haven't seen it. I dare say the Republican governed states are more egalitarian, number one, and I'd say more racially harmonious. I'd much rather be a Black or Hispanic person in Texas than I would in California. I'm sure that the testing results, the income disparities in that are better in Texas. You have much better chance of having a middle-class life there than you would in California. I'd rather be in Texas than New York. I'd rather be in Florida than New York or Connecticut or that. So, yeah, I don't know. I think the Republicans need to go on the offensive. You know, Republicans are always afraid of, you know, conservatives in general always like, and it's because the left wing has cultural hegemony. They're always kind of apologetic. They're like, well, I'm a Republican, but I'm not one of those Republicans, or I'm conservative, but it's like, no, I'm not saying but anymore. I'm tired of that. The left is burning down cities. They're burning it down. They're burning down churches. You know, they're throwing bricks through things. If they disagree with you, they're going to cancel you and get you fired and force you into the unemployment lines. Those aren't good people. I look at history and I look at when the left has had total power. Good things don't happen. Actually, bad things happen, very bad things. So I'm tired of it. I go on the offensive, Mr. Trump, you know, and you know what? One more thing, and this really, really bothers me, but they had Caroline Kennedy talk about her uncle, Ted. Is it Caroline Kennedy who was JFK's daughter? Like that,
yeah.
Her uncle, Ted murdered a woman. Okay. Mary Jo Kopechne. Murder her. That's not even a conspiracy theory. He murdered her. Okay. Bill Clinton is a rapist, and they feature them in positions of honor. So I'm tired of apologizing for the vulgarities of Mr. Trump. I'm really tired of it. When you have Ted Kennedy, who Trump never murdered a woman. Okay. You know, he might've touched people in inappropriate places, but he never murdered a woman, and you're honoring Ted Kennedy and acting like he's this great lion in the Senate, you know, go, give me a break. Anyway, give me a Kit Kat bar. Give me a break. Break me off these Kit Kat bar.
So, I, you know, in terms of polling, I did want to touch on something that I have found fascinating, and it's been multiple polls. I want to say 4 or 5 now have come out within the last week to 10 days that have showed Trump leading among independents. Most notably was a CBS poll that came out. It may have been even yesterday. That showed Trump actually up 10 points on independents in a poll that had him down 10 points nationally. And you know, I'll explain why, you know, as they weighted the poll, they gave, you know, there was a 11.4% more Democrats in the poll than Republicans. Now on the surface, you're like, oh, well, you know, why isn't 50-50? Or, you know, typically, historically, if you look back, there are more Democrats in our country than Republicans. And in 2016, it was, I believe, a Democrat plus 3 electorate. In 20, and I'm kind of going off of exit poll, and these are from exit polls from CNN. In 2008, you know, a big election for the Democrats. President Obama won. It was just a shellacking, no other way to put it. It was actually only a plus seven electorate. So a lot of these polls that have come out, you know, again, I said this last episode, you got to go into the weeds and kind of read them a little bit closer. The odds of this being an electorate of 11.4% more Democrats than Republicans voting, it's just not going to happen. It didn't happen in 2008, which was a plus seven year. You know, last election was plus three. You know, maybe you could see somewhere in between, let's say plus five. If it's a plus five electorate and Trump's winning independents by 10, in my eyes, it's virtually a neck and neck race. And I think as some of these pollsters kind of go more into like a likely voter model as opposed to a registered voter model, you're going to see these national polls that show these huge leads for Biden, which just to me makes zero sense. Tighten even more significantly. Again, I'm only mentioning this. Obviously, we don't elect our president based on the popular vote. We base it on the Electoral College. But a shift of a few points nationally will be enough to shift Florida, perhaps Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, in a state that I actually think Trump has a better chance of winning than Michigan this time around, which is Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
I really honestly do think that. And so you got to kind of watch it. But if you see a tightening nationally, a lot of those swing states where Trump might be just down a couple, you know, 1 to 3 points right now, event become either a tie or a slight Trump lead, which is, again, how you win an election. So that's going to be something to watch. If Trump wins the independents by, you know, more than 5 points, I like his odds. And just for some context, in 2016, he won them by, I think it was 3 points from the CNN exit polls, 3 or 4 points. So, which is kind of surprising. Again, the way the media makes it seem like you would think, like, why would any independent want to vote for Donald Trump? But again, I think some independents are like, you know, take the personality out, take Trump out of the equation. We like kind of what he's done on a lot of issues, and they resonate with him on a personal level. So that's going to be a number to really watch. This is the independent number in these polls moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, there's a big disconnect between the national polls, which show Biden up around 5 to 10 points, and the state polls, which show to be much tighter. And the way I unite the two in my mind is that, you know, Trump doesn't need to win the national polls to win the election. He just needs to get it tight. So, like, if Biden's up 3 in a national poll, that to me is a Trump victory, clearly.
I agree.
If Biden's up 5, it's 50-50% chance. So I think you're absolutely dead on in your interpretation. And I think it will be independents to determine this for Trump. I think the Republican base is united in favor of him. Democrats are united against him. It's going to be independents that, you know, determine if he wins or not and where he wins. I agree with you. Minnesota, I think he can win Minnesota. I actually think he's more competitive in Michigan than people realize. I think it's hard to poll Michigan well.
True.
I do worry about Sun Belt states like Arizona, Florida. That's where I lose sleep at night. But I think Ohio is going to vote Republican. Like, I don't think there's any chance that Ohio. Here's one point I want to put out there for you, Michael, and this might lead into the next point. If Biden were truly up by 9 to 10 points, right, Ohio, even though it's been trending red, should be a blue state.
Correct.
Okay. And I feel, and this is, again, this is kind of gut stuff, I feel Ohio is safely Trump. Like, I don't think Ohio is going blue. It might be at a smaller margin than before, but it's like 5 points or above Trump. Okay, if that's true, then Biden's not really up 9 points. So I just look around the area, and I kind of know the different areas in that. I think Trump is up in Ohio. If that's true, Biden is up, not up 9 points nationally. He's just not, right? Like, you can't make those two things work. I don't know if you think through it the same way, but
yeah, I think you have a good way of looking at, you know, again, Ohio was more Republican last election than maybe historically it has been. In some way, it at one point in time, it, you know, was a bellwether. Maybe as it trends more red, it's not going to be the case anymore. But you bring up a good point. You know, there has been a couple polls out that it showed maybe Biden tied with Trump. There was actually one out that actually came out today, but it's from 3 weeks ago, that had Biden up 1 here, but it was a Democrat internal poll, which automatically in my eyes is a red flag. But one thing I'll say on like on a local level is, especially kind of from looking on social media and just driving around, especially like in Canfield and Poland, there are a ton of Donald Trump signs out again. I've started to see more Biden signs start popping up in some parts of the area, but it's still like a vast vast majority of the signs out there right now are Trump signs. So, but I agree with your point. I think if this is truly a 9-point race for Joe Biden, there's no reason he wouldn't be up like 4 to 5 points in Ohio. And yeah, right. There's not like a huge divergence, I think, when it comes to Ohio versus the U.S. At least not in 4 years, I don't think there has been.
Right. Right. Even if Ohio is more Republican, it still should be, if Biden's up 9 points, you should still see more evidence of it, right? And I think you and I both know the state very well. Like, the Youngstown suburbs should be solidly blue if Biden were up 9 points. They right. should. Like, you should be seeing tons of Biden signs. You shouldn't be seeing very few. Like, you'll go out to the red counties. Yeah, you'll see Trump signs there. But, like, Trumbull County, Mahoney County suburbs should be blue if Biden were truly up 9 points. And they're not. They're very red. And I've heard from other people who have confirmed what you said, that, like, Cornersburg, west side of Youngstown, right?
Yep.
Lots of Trump signs.
Yeah, you know, 2 minutes from my house.
2 minutes from your house, yeah. Wow, this is a good lead-in for you. Did some analysis on
And I will let me post this in the chat, and I'll be sure to share this on our Facebook page, because obviously I know a lot of people are watching the convention, but I'll share this kind of in a post just because I think it's some good information. And I guess real quick, one more point. You mentioned Florida. I don't know if I posted this on our Facebook page. I did post it on our Twitter page probably a week or two ago. I took a dive in the Florida polls because they were way off in 2018. If you remember, DeSantis really stood no chance to win against Andrew Gillum in 2018. And Rick Scott looked like actually he was had a better chance of winning the Senate seat against, I think it was Bill Nelson. But I took a look at the polls there, and I'm trying to pull it up right now. But like, if you look at the Real Clear Politics average, or the 538 prediction, or some of the pollsters like Quinnipiac, it wasn't even like it was like 3 to 5 points off the last four major statewide elections. So right now, you know, Biden's up down there, I think 3 or 4 points, and I just pulled this up right now. So I was a little off. So, like 538, you know, Nate Silver, you know, big political prognosticator, modeler, all that. His numbers were off the last four elections, and this is Trump, Clinton, Rubio, Murphy, Scott Nelson, and DeSantis Gillum by three points. Quinnipiac was off 4 points, and then Gravis was off 3.5 points. So there's something there. It seems like some of the pollsters, the last four major statewide elections, are missing some sort of voters because they're definitely skewed more Democratic. So again, if it's a 3 or 4 point race lead for Biden right now, when the polls have been off about 3 points, to me, it's neck and neck. And I do find comfort in the fact that again, 2018, the Republicans didn't look like they were going to win the state or the U.S. Senate seat there, or the governor's seat. And they ended up winning. And it was, again, very reminiscent of 2016. Democrats took a big lead early. Then the panhandle came in. Republicans took a lead that they never lost. So I do find some comfort there. Arizona might be, you know, I do have some concerns there, but something about Florida, it's just such a unique state from it, you know, the panhandle's more like, you know, Alabama or Mississippi. And then you got other parts of the state where you got a lot of Northerners, a lot of Ohioans, in certain parts of the state. So, we'll see how it shapes up there, but I am somewhat confident that he can win Florida. Now, what I posted in the chat was the Ohio Secretary of State on their website. If somebody's really bored like I was this weekend, you could actually pull the election results, and it's by precinct. And it, you know, it's not only the presidential one; you could use state issues, state rep, all those types of things by precinct. So what I did is, since, you know, Youngstown's in Mahoning County, unfortunately for Dane, a former Trumbull County resident, I did not pull it for Trumbull County, but I could, is I pulled the information and I aggregated it by township or city or village within Mahoning County. And you know, there's a couple obvious ones like you would expect. Like the city of Youngstown went 76% to Clinton. Camel went 67% to Clinton. But this is a very blue county that typically goes 60 to 62% for the Democratic candidate in the presidential election. Kind of from a quick glance here, I think those were the only two communities to even go
over. Austintown. Well, oh, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you're fine. But those were the only two that were over 60%. And, you know, again, typically this is a county that goes 60 to 62%. Now, there's a few other ones that Clinton, you know, won slightly, like Austintown that you mentioned. What else here? We have Lowville. That's kind of a random one. And Struthers, kind of another blue-collar, you know, river community there. But it's really fascinating to kind of to look at these numbers. Canfield went very strong to Trump, which I expect to happen once again here. But the rural parts of the county, which again aren't a ton of votes, you know, in aggregate, but the margins were very large in some, you know, 50% margins in the more rural parts of the district. That wasn't always the case. You know, they were, you know, solidly Republican, but not at those margins. So, you know, I shared that in the chat, but it's something to kind of to look over, especially if you live in Mahoning County. I thought it's kind of fascinating to kind of look at the different, especially the suburbs, to see how they voted.
Yeah, it is. It is. What surprised me was that Boardman was Republican while Austintown was Democrat. In my mind, those two are flipped. Austintown seems more conservative than Boardman. It's interesting. It's interesting how those two areas were they were not what I thought they would be.
Yeah, and now somebody who used to live in Austintown and now lives in Boardman, I probably would attribute that to the fact of along 224, there are some where I live, it's right along the border with Canfield. You know, from seeing like yard signs and all that, it seems that the people along maybe the borders of Boardman and Canfield, and then Boardman and Poland, which is another pretty solidly Republican community here. It seems like along those borders of Boardman that there might be more Trump support there. You know, Austintown, again, it was close margin, 3.4%. But Boardman, I think that's what I would attribute that to, that 224 corridor. You know, especially if you go anywhere south of that, closer to Western Reserve Road, I think the same would be said there. But, you know, again, interesting numbers for a pretty blue county. And another thing I did post, and I'm just kind of all over the place right now, and I think I posted this on our Facebook page, was what I thought was kind of interesting, you know, as a political guy, was the 2016 absentee results versus the election day numbers. I don't know if, Dan,
Get to see that. No. What's the main takeaway?
Well, you know, fortunately, I was able to find the absentee results for Trumbull County, kind of a rough estimate for Trumbull County, and then the actual numbers for Mahoning County. And I remember on election night early on, Hillary Clinton had pretty solid leads, double-digit leads, actually, in both counties. And I'm seeing if I could pull this up here. You know, naturally, you know, although I get a new router, my internet's still slow here. Let me see if I can go to the post. But it's fascinating that on election day, if you kind of take the final results and subtract out the absentee, Donald Trump really, really did very well on election day here. And I've been trying to ponder as to what that's attributed to. And I'm trying to see here. And I think, let's see here. Okay, here we go. This was posted, and I'll post this in the chat, 6 days ago. Here we go. So, like in Trumbull County, Dane, where you know you're originally from, Trump won the election day vote by 13 points, which is like a huge number.
Whoa.
And then in Mahoning County, he won it only by 6 points. You know, Trumbull County ended up going almost 7 points to Trump. Mahoning County, Hillary won it by a little less than 3 percentage points. But it's really interesting to see how well Trump did on election day. And I'm not, again, I've been trying to figure out where those people just going to vote for Trump, or was it a late shift, or what that was?
So here's the point, right? And the reason why Trumbull Mahoning County are so important, and it's kind of repeating what just said, but if this holds in this election, there is no way Biden is winning by 9 points, right? If you're from anywhere else in the country, Michael and I are telling you, this area, which is a big swing area, is red. And it looks just as red as before. It might even be redder, right? And what we're telling you is if that is true, then the poll showing Biden at 9 to 10 points in the lead are false. They're just false, right? Because the area, it can't be that much divergent from the overall U.S. vote count. Maybe a little bit, but not hugely so. So I guess my big takeaway is, I guess, and this might be one to close out the episode. Michael, do you think where you stand now, the numbers that you're looking at, you know, the results, do you think that's going to bear out a second time?
I actually, early on, I would have said no, but the more, you know, from yard signs, you can only read so much in the yard signs, but the, you know, listening to talk radio and talking to different people, I wouldn't be surprised now. You know, I don't know if it, like in Trumbull, you know, if Trump would win it by that margin, but I don't think the Democrat platform right now resonates with the old school Democrats or independents here, especially here with the type of Democrats. You know, we were always a reliably blue area, but we were never, and I think I even touched on this last episode, we were never a like San Francisco Democrat, which is kind of like the party, the Democrat Party now. You know, you hear much, especially on the radio, you hear people say, I didn't leave the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party left me. I think like the Mahoney Valley is ground zero for that. It's just not what it used to be. And I think what could work in Trump's favor, especially like, you know, if some law enforcement unions were to come out in favor of him, and other union voters, you know, maybe the management or the leadership of unions may not vote for or support Trump, but I think the membership in large numbers probably does support Trump. And especially, I think the biggest thing here is China and how he's renegotiated NAFTA as well. Those are two things that really hit home in this area. And I think Trump has delivered on those promises. And I think that's going to help him. You know, a lot of the other fluff and all that other stuff. Remember, we're a community that had Jim Trafficant as our congressman for a number of years. And in some ways, you know, Jim Trafficant was a populist. You know, maybe he's, you know, 20 years. He's kind of like a preview of what Donald Trump was. He didn't really have much of a filter. He just said things that, you know, maybe left you scratching your head. But at the end of the day, a lot of people around here supported him because they felt like Trafficant had their back. It didn't matter necessarily, you know, what side he was supporting on an issue. He had their back. So I don't know. It's early for me to say, but I think there is enthusiasm for Trump still here in the Mahoning Valley.
Yeah, I think the energy is shifting. I think he was down a few weeks ago, but I think he's getting stronger, right? The campaign is building momentum. That's my take on it, at least. I mean, if we have some more riots, right? I think that only helps Trump. I'm not trying to be cynical here, but like how many more fucking cities, how many more cities can you burn down, right? Before it's like, what's the point of this? You just have ruined stores. How did anybody get helped? How did it help anybody? I don't know. I think the momentum is definitely in Trump's favor. And I think he's coming back. And I was somebody who was very, very bearish on his chances. But I think he could pull this off, which would be ridiculous. He's such a lucky guy. I don't know.
Yeah. So lucky. It is kind of remarkable. And you touched on it. Why do we care? You, obviously, you know, we're both from the Mahoning Valley. But on election night 2016, when you started to see more of the returns come in for Mahoning and Trumbull County, it wasn't until I really started seeing those results come in when I really thought Trump had a chance of winning. You know, I was watching and I have vivid memories of that election night, and I've watched kind of glimpses of election night coverage on YouTube, you know, from the different networks. And I vividly remember following Florida, and while Florida was coming in, the panhandle came in when Trump took the lead there. I went back to Ohio, and I might be a little off on like the timestamps here, but Ohio early on, like through 35%, Trump was losing. And then Mahoning and Trumbull started coming in, and I started seeing these numbers, and I'm like, whoa, something's happening here. And kind of how Mahoning Valley is, Mahoning and Trumbull County, it's very symbolic of the Rust Belt in general. So yeah, when I started to see Western PA, and when I started to see these Michigan results, it all started to connect. And, you know, I was fortunate, you know, again, I didn't predict this in any way, shape or form, but we kind of, the writing was on the wall when the race was tightening here. And then when Trumbull went to Trump, and that was really at the point when I realized like something's happening here. The pundits completely missed it. And I honestly think Trump's going to win this election.
What a perfect note to end on. This episode started with me making fun of Chuck Todd and George Stephanopoulos, who are classic pundits who know nothing, yet they get paid millions of dollars to ask basic, you know, fourth grade level questions. And they totally miss the Trump campaign. And did they lose their job? Did any pundit lose their job? They're supposed to be experts in politics. Did they lose
They doubled down.
Yeah. And here we are again. So there you go. It's a perfect, it's a little like bookend to the episode.
It is a book, and my biggest issue with the pundits is I pretty sure it was Chuck Todd said, you know, we did a poor job. We need to get out there, you know, in the heart of America, middle America, and try to figure out these voters. And they, in my estimation, they never did that. And it's going to cost, it could cost them again this time. And I think they've just doubled down on their, you know, opposition to Trump, their animosity towards Trump. And, you know, they stayed in their blue bubbles and you know, they report and they say on the air what they want to say that's going to make Trump look bad. But again, if you come here, you know, ground zero for crossover voters from Democrat to Republican in 2016, I don't think you're going to see a big shift back towards the Democrats at all in 2020. So. Good discussions. Any last thoughts, Dave?
Here's the thought on these coastal elites. These people hate you. They hate you. They hate your families. It's not that they're out of touch. No, they're in touch. They just hate what everything you stand for, you believe, you worship. Okay, and they're waging a decades-long war against you. The coastal elites, and make no mistake about it, right? When if your store were to get burned down and your livelihood were to get ruined or your job were to get outsourced or if your son were killed in the deserts of Afghanistan or Iraq, they wouldn't care. OK, so keep that in mind. Donald Trump is not a perfect person, but he's the only one fighting against them. It might not be the perfect strategy. He's not the perfect general, but he fights. So he gets my vote. Right. That's the least I can do for him. Just remember, these people do not. You know, George Stephanopoulos, Chuck Todd, all these guys, they don't care about you. They don't like you. They wish you would just go away because you represent a country that is fundamentally hostile to what they want to see. Right. The America of yesteryear, Democrats, Republicans, this isn't a partisan thing. Right. Democrats and Republicans both made America. I'm not saying this is all Democrats. I'm just saying these coastal, it's a bipartisan elite consensus. They do not like you. So don't like them in return. Don't support them. You know, make fun of them when you see them. You know what I mean? Make fun of the politicians because they'll gladly send, you know, they'll gladly push a war that will have your son killed. And they won't care. They won't care. Do you think the people in Manhattan really care about Youngstown, Ohio? Right? They're just getting richer while your job gets outsourced and your son dies of heroin. And then they tell you you have white privilege. That's our elite. Our elite doesn't even like this country. So keep that in mind.
Well, thank you, Dane, for your thoughts this episode. I think we had some good discussion. Obviously, you know, we knew we were going up against the Republican convention and we, you know, we weren't trying to duke it out, but we wanted to share our thoughts because, you know, there's a lot going on politically and we wanted to share those thoughts. So we're ending before 10 o'clock. So whoever the keynote is, again, I think you said it was Don Jr. tonight.
Yeah.
You know, people could certainly tune into that, but again, I'd imagine we'll have a lot of people listening to the podcast. So again, thank you everybody for tuning in. Make sure you like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and definitely subscribe to us on whatever your favorite podcasting app. We're pretty much found on all of them. So again, thank you everybody. I'll continue to post some random political data on the Facebook page just because I like doing those sort of things. And I'll try to put something together for Trumbull County here within the next week or two for Dane and for those of you from Trumbull County that might be tuning in. So. Thank you all for tuning in, and Dane, thanks to you as well. Hope everybody has a nice night.
this episode was sponsored by the RNC. They're official sponsors of the MV Red. Yeah. That's our sponsor. Okay, good night, Michael.